In response to the events of September 11th, the United States appears to be launched into a new age of patriotism, of flag-waving, singing America the Beautiful, and returning the Pledge of Allegiance to the schools. Without doubt, such patriotism has helped the nation weather the tragedies of that fateful day and to renew our spirits, but it's also raised questions among many as to who gets to claim the American flag and who is to determine the meanings of the republic for which it stands. These questions are not new to historians. In fact, they're central to a newly published book whose author is with us this week. The book is To Die For, The Paradox of American Patriotism, and the author is Cecilia Elizabeth O'Leary. Cecilia is a professor of history at the California State University at Monterey Bay, where she also is co-director of the Oral History and Community Memory Institute. Welcome, Cecilia.
Thank you.
Patriotism, always an interesting topic in the United States, but did you have any idea when you started this book how relevant it would be?
I actually didn't know it would become this relevant. I wrote it at a time, it was published 2 years ago, of relative peace, and so when the September 11th attack occurred, I was taken by surprise in terms of how quickly I had to become a public historian, I had to become a public intellectual, and really share what I had learned with media around the country, because what I found out when I began this study was that, in fact, there's been struggles over the meaning of patriotism and the meaning of the flag through every single generation in the history of this country.
Well, that's what we're here for today, to give a little historical perspective on it. So let's start with the question. Let me quote to you from what you wrote, that although the Civil War determined the survival of the United States, what it meant to be a loyal American or disloyal un-American remained an open question until the matter was settled, albeit temporarily, during World War I. Explain that sentence for us, if you would.
The beginning of the Civil War, the United States was principally fighting against the attack by the Confederate States to keep one country. So what patriotism meant was that to die for your country. But then in 1863, when President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, he radically expanded the meaning of what the flag represented and what it meant to be a loyal American. Not only did it mean love of country or willingness to die, but he expanded it to include the reciprocal responsibility of the government, of the nation, to ensure that the principles of equality were actually something that were protected and realized in everyday life. So freedom was offered to the slaves. And this really began an emancipatory tradition in the meaning of patriotism in our country. And so when the Civil War ended, of course, the boundaries of the United States had been secured, but what it would mean to be an American, what tradition, would white supremacy reemerge? Would this new emancipatory tradition of struggling for actually realizing equal rights and equality, liberty in our everyday lives, would that be something that would come to bear? Would the Confederacy challenge on the cultural front the United States? So there were many, many open questions at the end of the Civil War. And really the battle over what it meant to be American moved off of the field and into the cultural arena.
And how were those questions ultimately answered?
Those questions have never been ultimately answered. Every single generation has had to redefine what it meant to be an American. Between the Civil War and World War I, there was tremendous fluidity and debate and discussion. There were some, such as veterans in the Grand Army of the Republic, which was the first mass organization of veterans, that really promoted the flying of the flag over the public schools and made school children the central activists in patriotic culture. There were others such as the Daughter of the American Revolution who really wanted to have blood and heredity be what determined what it was to be an American. There were progressive educators who again wanted to teach patriotism, but they weren't just interested in an emotional attachment to the country, but they wanted to introduce civics and what they would call a thoughtful patriotism, and a patriotism that I would see coming out of the emancipatory tradition that really stresses critical thinking. But by World War I, what happened was for the very first time the U.S. government actually joined forces with what became vigilante groups to enforce a very restrictive, very politically intolerant form of patriotism that meant that other points of view were silenced at the end of that war. And that doesn't mean that they were silenced forever, because as we know in the history of our different wars, the debate has always emerged in terms of whether civil liberties are going to be protected or abandoned, whether citizenship rights are going to be expanded or limited.
Perhaps given the time in which we now live, you could expand a bit on how exactly that happened during World War I.
Well, during World War I, at the very beginning, there was great opposition to the war. There were organizations such as the Socialist Party that saw it really as a war among elites over the spoils of profits, and didn't see why workers should have to go and fight in a war that wasn't going to be in their interest. There were organizations such as the International Workers of the World that really questioned whether workers should pledge loyalty to a flag that doesn't pledge loyalty to them. African Americans were very much in debate about whether to support the war. Of course, when the war is declared, they closed ranks and absolutely became strong supporters of the war. But before war was declared, there was a real struggle over what does it mean to fight for a country where the citizenship rights had just been lost in the South at the end of Reconstruction. So should there be a bargain that was set? And in the end, they decided, no, we're going to march in step. But the struggle over patriotism and the meaning of Americanism was also further complicated by notions of what is it of race and 100% Americanism. And there were nativists who wanted to close and barricade the borders. They were what I call them is they were not optimistic Americanizers. They didn't believe that immigrants really had contributions to make to the country. They wanted if immigrants to stay out, or if they were allowed in, the 100% Americanism was really a view that they would have to become Anglo-Americans. They would have to only speak English, only have identification with an English heritage in terms of the of a nation that they would identify with. And so when German Americans were torn about whether or not they were going to swear allegiance to the flag and give up also a loyalty to Germany, many immigrants had dual allegiances. They weren't disloyal citizens, they just felt torn. They would fly a flag, some of them would to prove that they were loyal, others didn't want to fly a flag. Others would be surrounded by mobs on the street and forced to kiss the flag on the ground to prove their patriotism. So the flag really became a litmus test. So it wasn't any act of disloyalty. You had to be actively proving constantly that you were loyal. And in one instance, a man refused to kiss an American flag, and he used the language of, it's just a piece of cloth with painted stripes on it, and it might, you know, have bacteria. For that, he was sentenced to 20 years in the state penitentiary. And the appeal court was not able to reverse that conviction, even though he felt that the crowd who had surrounded this man, the judge said that they had really shown themselves to be like the horrors of the Salem witch trials. He couldn't reverse it because of the Alien and Sedition Acts that had been passed during World War I that made even language that was disrespectful to the flag a basis for conviction.
So symbols like the flag become very important to this process, and rituals, to be sure. Are there any others, for example, the Pledge of Allegiance that you address in your book that perhaps you could talk a bit about here?
Well, the Pledge of Allegiance grew out of the schoolhouse flag movement. At the end of the 19th century, the public school system was just beginning to expand and become a national system. And at that very same time, there were different groups of people who wanted to promote patriotism. In fact, the end of the 19th century was really called the Age of Patriotism. It's when the flag, when groups of people organized to make the flag sacred, when there's tremendous organizing and mobilizing to fly the flag over the schools, because people are concerned that without a war like the Civil War, that what's going to teach the new generation loyalty? And so as part of this campaign, a major national magazine that was sold to parents and to teachers called the Youth Companion, they asked one of their workers, Francis Bellamy, to write a Pledge of Allegiance. Francis Bellamy is a very interesting person. He had been a minister. He had been fired by his church because he was found to have views on labor that were much too radical. He preached that Jesus was the friend of the worker. And so he came into working for the Youth Companion as a Christian socialist, as someone who believed in capitalism but was absolutely against the kind of exploitation that he saw taking place with the incorporation of America that was also happening at the 19th century and the immiseration of workers who were working under incredibly harsh conditions. And so when he was asked to write the pledge, he wanted to write something that had historical meaning. Indivisible really echoed the speeches and discussions that had surrounded the Civil War, that it's one nation indivisible. But then he said, well, what does our nation stand for? And this is when he began to entertain, and I found this in his diaries when I was researching archives in Upper State, New York. In his diary, he writes, you know, what should we be? What do we represent? And he said, well, maybe I could say in the pledge, I'll use the French slogan from the Revolution, liberty, equality, and fraternity. This is a very extraordinary idea to think about using a revolutionary slogan that includes equality during the very years that lynching of African Americans was on the rise, that Reconstruction had ended in the South. I mean, this is in 1891. And so he's considering, you know, can I say this? And fraternity, that we really are brothers and, he would not say sisters, but I would say brothers and sisters in the defense of equality and liberty. But then he thought, no, I think maybe we're too individualistic right now for people to accept that, so I'm going to leave it open so that the nation in the future can decide whether it's going to be an individualistic or socialist state.
Well, interesting. And those same questions really remain with us today. So let me, in the few minutes we have left, move up and just simply ask you, what do you, as an historian, make of this sudden outburst of American patriotism we're seeing today?
Well, first of all, I think it's in direct response to the fact that the attack took place on the mainland of the United States. This is only the second time that the mainland of the United States has been attacked. The first time was in the War of 1812 when the British marched into the capital to burn it down. Pearl Harbor took place, of course, in Hawaii, which isn't on the mainland. So one, we have that the actual earth of the mainland of the United States was attacked. Second, I think that coming off of the dot-com economy of the last two decades, where being American was primarily defined by what you can buy, I think there was a very deep sense among people who flew the flag that they wanted to reclaim a sense of community. And people flew it for many different reasons. I think among them, some just wanted, you know, my country right or wrong, America first, you know, military response. Others were flying it because they felt that a deep tragedy had taken place and they wanted to extend their sense of oneness with the people who had lost their lives. I think other people were flying it for the first time and not sure why to fly it, but wanted to show that we were united as a people. And I think that there's tremendous importance to the different reasons why people fly the flag. And today we really need to consider, which tradition do we want that flag to stand for? Do we want it to stand for an emancipatory tradition, which certainly I do, where we say this United States isn't right or wrong, it's right, and that we're committed to democratic rights inside of the United States and also in terms of who we make alliances with and how this war on terrorism is conducted. Is it going to just be owned by commerce? Is it the United Corporations of America? Flag, and is the flag simply going to become a shopping bag, which I see posters of all over San Francisco? So there's an enormous question right now in terms of, yes, there's been this incredible outpouring of patriotism, but we have to define what that means. We have to say it's not freedom in the abstract. Is it really a dedication to freedom in reality? Like when the bailout to the airlines happened, this was a patriotic act. But meanwhile, the airlines were continuing, United, their parent company, was continuing to buy planes for special business chartered flights. And none of the money was going to the workers who was laid off. So is that the kind of patriotism? When Barbara Lee stood up and said, no, the full war powers shouldn't be given to the president, I stand by the Constitution, she got hate mail accusing her of being a traitor. I think Barbara Lee was being a patriot. She was saying democracy is what makes us strong. We need to safeguard that. So we have an enormous challenge in front of us today of how are we going to define the flag, who gets to claim it, and whether or not it's going to extend or limit citizenship rights.
Well, I can't think of a better way to summarize it, so I think we'll just stop right there and let me thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cecilia Elizabeth O'Leary, author of To Die For, The Paradox of American Patriotism.